This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. I'm Yehiyesu Uhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
You never know when, you never know how, you never know how close, you never know who you choose, you know? Like, I literally wake up every day just preparing myself to lose someone.
That's Gaza resident Nawar Diab, who says she traveled to the south but does not feel any safer than she did in her home in the north. Details coming up. Also, Nigeria's inflation rate has risen to its highest level in two decades. And an anti-foreigner group in South Africa has launched a campaign to shut down all foreign-owned informal convenience stores called Tucks. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. U.S. President Joe Biden is home after spending 7 hours in the Israeli war zone. His visit followed several days of intense diplomacy in the Middle East by U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. And today, British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is in Israel. Biden has promised $10 billion in aid to Israel and $100 million for residents of Gaza and the West Bank. Tonight, he will address the American people to lay out U.S. policy on the conflict between Israel and Hamas militants. Aid trucks are expected to start arriving in Gaza from Egypt in the next day or so to ease the effects of the Israeli blockade on the territory. Israel cut off flows of food, fuel, medicines, and power to Gaza's 2.2 million residents last week after Hamas militants assaulted Israeli communities, killing about 1,400 people and taking more than 200 hostages. Since then, Israel has bombarded Gaza, which Hamas governs, with missiles and airstrikes. Officials in Gaza today said more than 3,700 Palestinians, mostly women and children, have died and more than 12,000 injured. To discuss the latest developments, we have standing by journalist Linda Gradstein in Tel Aviv. Welcome to Africa News Tonight.
Thank you.
So, Linda, what is the latest developments?
Well, you know, as you said, aid trucks are standing by. It's expected that sometime Friday, Egypt will open the Rafah border. Israel has promised not to bomb that area, and aid trucks will begin to come into a very badly needed Gaza situation, which is really on the verge of a humanitarian crisis. Also, presumably, several hundred dual American-Palestinian students American-Palestinian dual citizens who were caught in Rafah, caught in Gaza with the fighting, will be able to leave to go to Egypt and eventually to go home.
So any word on the hostages so far?
Well, there was a few days ago, there was a very heartbreaking video of a young woman, 21-year-old Mia Shem. It's the only, at least, public thing that we've seen. She's a French Israeli citizen, in which she was in a hospital getting medical treatment, and she said, you know, please bring me home as soon as possible. The New York Times did a metadata analysis and said that at least parts of the video were filmed 6 days ago, and Israel dismissed it as propaganda. So other than that, there have been no public signs of the hostages. However, I was in a war room that's run by volunteers, people who are, you know, all kinds of tech experts who very quickly got together. And they said that based on their information, that they believe that at least 100 of the hostages are still alive. That was a few days ago. And Israel also said the number of hostages is 203. Islamic Jihad has said it is holding another 50 or so, but that has not been confirmed.
So, like we mentioned earlier, U.S. President Joe Biden is home after spending 7 hours in the Israeli war zone. How has his visit been perceived in Israel?
Well, it was really perceived as a hug from the president. He was warmly welcomed. He came across as very supportive of Israel. He stayed about 2 hours longer than had originally been planned. The last event that he was supposed to do was sort of shaking hands with survivors of the Hamas attack and first responders. And he listened to each one. He wanted to hug each one, spend time with them. And I think Israelis were really comforted and encouraged by his coming. Israel still appears to be on the verge of a ground invasion. The defense minister, Yoav Gallant, tonight said that the ground invasion is coming and that it's going to be a long and protracted war.
Talk to us about the Egyptian border where convoys are ready to come into to Gaza, because U.S. President Biden told reporters he was satisfied he got the job done. So was he talking about the issue of unblocking humanitarian aid to besieged Gaza?
Yes, apparently. I mean, you know, he came and while I said publicly he was very supportive of Israel, he was also, I think, sort of, you know, warning Israel against a humanitarian crisis. And so Israel said that the aid can come through the Egyptian border. However, Israel said it will not allow aid through its border as long as Hamas continues to hold the hostages. In addition, Israel said that if any of the aid ends up going to Hamas, it will stop the flow of that aid immediately.
As far as the death toll, is it still 1,400 people from, Israeli side and about 3,700 Palestinians?
Yes. Again, that's expected, unfortunately, to rise. On the Israeli side, there are still a few hundred bodies that have not been finally identified. And on the Palestinian side, as the Israeli bombardment continues in Gaza, which is, of course, so densely populated, that's also expected to rise. And if there is an Israeli ground incursion, as both sides are kind of expecting, then, unfortunately, of course, the death toll will continue to rise.
And finally, Linda, the British Prime Minister has been in Israel. What has come of that trip?
Well, he was also very supportive of Israel. He met with Prime Minister Netanyahu and called Hamas a terrorist organization, which is how Israel sees it. At the same time, he also kind of warned against a humanitarian crisis. And, you know, said that he knows that Israel will observe the international sort of conventions on this. So I think it was sort of a follow-up to President Biden's visit, showing that, you know, the whole world does support Israel, but also warning against a crisis in Gaza.
Linda Granstein in Tel Aviv, updating us on the situation in Israel. Thank you very much for your input.
Thank you.
U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin placed more than 2,000 military personnel on heightened alert this week with a prepare to deploy order. The Pentagon is telling VOA that should the president activate the units, they will further boost the U.S. military's air defenses, medical and logistical capabilities, and intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance abilities in the Middle East. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob breaks down how the U.S. is flexing its military muscle in the region.
Another American carrier strike group speeds toward the region. The USS Dwight D. Eisenhower aircraft carrier will join the USS Gerald R. Ford carrier strike group that's locked and loaded in the eastern Mediterranean. Pentagon Deputy Press Secretary Sabrina Singh.
Our main goal by positioning not one, but a second carrier will be there soon, is to send a message of deterrence, to say to actors in the region who think that they might want to take advantage of this conflict, do not do that.
Sailors aboard the USS Ford, America's biggest and baddest warship, had been wrapping up their six-month deployment. Now, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has extended the deployment of the Ford, along with the cruiser and destroyer ships sailing with it, without stating an end date. Three ships with the USS Bataan Amphibious Ready Group are positioning thousands of Marines in waters near Israel. Marines able to penetrate hostile territory or provide medical care and assistance. A squadron of A-10 attack aircraft has arrived in the Middle East with another A-10 squadron's deployment extended. And more F-15 and F-16 fighter jets also are rolling in, as concerns grow that Hezbollah could join the fight from the north once an expected ground invasion of Gaza begins. Dakota Wood is a senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation.
Hezbollah has something like 200,000 rockets and missiles. The ability to strike those positions would be incredibly important. These force packages create that opportunity or that option.
In addition to boosting its military presence, the U.S. has sent at least 5 C-17s carrying military aid for Israel Defense Forces. Again, Pentagon Deputy Press Secretary Sabrina Singh.
We are certainly giving Israel the security assistance it needs to take out and to effectively push back on Hamas in Gaza. Again, I will reiterate as many times as you want. That does not mean the killing of innocent civilians.
U.S. defense officials say the administration is providing Israel with precision munitions and interceptor missiles for its Iron Dome air defense system, with more to come. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
A Palestinian woman who went to southern Gaza this week after Israeli officials advised Palestinians to leave northern Gaza says she is just as frightened now of being hit by an Israeli airstrike and recently lost a close friend in an Israeli bombing. Noor Diab tells VOA's Carol Van Damme there is no safe place to shelter in Gaza.
We went to the south because it's supposed to be safer, but it's not. The situation is the same. The bombing is still here.
Is it as bad as it was where you were
before? Yeah. Like everything we experienced before in the north is the same thing. So, yeah, same situation, bombing all the time. Yeah, it's the same thing going. Nothing changed.
I heard from another Palestinian, a gentleman that's also in the south, and he went from the north to the south like you, that he's staying in a really, really overcrowded school along with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of other people.
Yeah.
Is that what you're
doing?
Actually,
most of the places, no. I'm in a relative's house.
Okay. And where you are at your relative's house, are you hearing bombing still?
Yeah. Like maybe like 10 minutes ago. And like the schools are incredibly, incredibly, incredibly full of people, and not just schools. Hospitals, too. I think you heard about Al Mamadani Hospital that got bombed.
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, it's not the only hospital that's full of people. There's also a hospital called Al Shifa. This hospital is, I don't know like where it's exactly located, but the street is named the same as the hospital. It's Al Shifa Street. This hospital is so full of people that you can't like walk. You can barely walk there. It's full of people and patients And, you know, also, there are people who, like, they just got out, like, from the rubble, like, under the rubble, and they told them to go home because there's no place for them in the hospital. Imagine, like, a person just getting out from the rubble, from, like, under a demolished house, and they told them to go home because there is no place for in the hospital. There's nothing.
Did you see this happening?
No. No, I didn't. But my mom did, my brother did, my uncle did, and my grandpa did.
You said you just heard a bombing 10 minutes ago. So how often, you know, just on average, are you hearing bombings?
You know, that's a question that I never answer. Because we always get surprised. They always surprise us. You never know when, you never know how, you never know how close, you never know who you lose, you know? Like, I literally wake up every day just preparing myself to lose someone. And like 3 days ago, I lost one of my dearest friends, and he died with his family. And I'm still processing what happened. I'm still like not okay from what happened. But that's how it is. That's how we're living. You wake up every day and you don't know when are they gonna bomb, how, who, where, you know, you never know.
What about your situation with your relative? How are you set for, you know, food and water? How do you get your electricity when you get it?
There's no electricity. Zero.
That's Gaza resident Nawar Diab, a member of the Palestinian nonprofit We Are Not Numbers, which helps Palestinian youth develop communication skills. She was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam today from southern Gaza. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Nigeria's inflation rate has risen to its highest level in two decades, 26.72%, according to the National Statistics Bureau. The latest figure keeps millions of people in Africa's largest country struggling to survive economic challenges that analysts say are exacerbated by government reform policies. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Nigeria's inflation rate in September rose for a ninth consecutive month from an already high 25.8% recorded in August. On a year-on-year basis, the inflation rate was 5.94% higher than when compared to the 20.77% recorded in September of 2022. The National Bureau of Statistics says the trend was caused by an increase in prices of food items like bread and cereals, meat, vegetables, milk, cheese, tubers, fish, fruit, oil, and fat. But economic observers say recent government policies, including the removal of fuel subsidies in May, are to blame for the surge and predict the trend might continue. Ogho Okiti is the chief executive officer of Think Business Africa.
The policies were not handled properly. When you are doing reforms, there should be what we call sequencing of reforms. What is happening is that they are learning on the job. We may actually reach 28-29% going by the pattern that we have seen. The reason is simple. Until the exchange rate stabilizes, inflation will not stabilize in Nigeria. We now have the value of the naira devalued by over 100% between June and today, within the space of 4 months.
Nigerian President Bola Tinubu embarked on bold policy reforms since assuming office in May, scrapping the expensive fuel subsidy payments, a package that ensured fuel was kept within affordable limits at pumps. The president, soon after that, floated the national tender, the naira, against other global currencies, causing the naira to lose more than half its value. The reforms hurt the economy, triggering criticism of the government. This month, a Nigerian workers' union shelved plans to embark on a nationwide strike to protest the government policies after a meeting with authorities. Okiti says pressures will continue to mount on government policymakers and consumers alike.
The three kind of pressures will continue: social, political, and economic pressure on the government. My hope is that this does not boil over into something very, very catastrophic. Because there is this illusion that Nigerians will just accept. That may not be the case.
But economic analyst Emeka Okengwu argues Nigeria's economy could have been worse without the president's policy reforms.
If you didn't remove the fuel subsidy and you are spending over 100% of your total revenue to be able to just support a social service, what do you think would have happened to the economy? It would have collapsed. You wouldn't be talking about inflation anymore. You'd be talking about stagflation. Sometimes economic development is a difficult thing. Sometimes you need to pay some very hard prices.
Nigeria has been recording double-digit inflation since 2016. During a national broadcast on October the 1st, President Tinubu defended his policies and urged Nigerians to be patient. Last week, the central bank lifted a ban on the sourcing of foreign exchange from official market for the importation of 43 items, including rice, cement, palm oil products, vegetable oils, and processed meat. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Members of Operation Dudula, a well-known anti-foreigner group in South Africa, today launched a campaign to shut down all foreign-owned tuck shops or informal convenience shops, usually run from home. The campaign comes on the heels of four children dying after allegedly eating snacks they bought at tuck shops. Operation Dudula accuses foreign-owned tuck shops of selling fake and expired food products. Tuso Kumalo has more from Johannesburg.
A few dozen members of Operation Tudula, which translates into Chase Out, visited several foreign-owned shops in Johannesburg's Soweto district. They took away all goods suspected of not having clearly printed expiration dates. Tabo Ngayo, National Coordinator of Operation Tudula, tells VOA that members found many expired grocery items.
The purpose, obviously, is to save the community from buying poisonous food from dispenser shops. And what we have achieved today, we managed to get some of the food that were expired and includes the nappies, includes the pads for women. And some of those pads, they're fake.
Operation Tudula member Tsietsi Mukeng denies allegations that the group is being xenophobic by targeting foreign nationals, but admits that shop inspections are the duty of government health inspectors.
We're inviting these health inspectors for, I don't know for how long. They've never come even once. So we're deciding that we take this expired stock because it's not good for consumption. So we decided to ban them.
One foreign shop owner from Ethiopia, who did not want to be named for fear of retribution, was said that his food items were confiscated. He says it's unfair to ask him to leave when he has an asylum permit that allows him to operate his shop.
When I take my paper, right, asylum paper, they allow me to cancel my for myself, and you can go to school.
There are hundreds of tuck shops across the country operated by foreign nationals, likely from Pakistan, Somalia, and Ethiopia. Other foreign nationals have expressed concern over Operation Tudula, saying they fear it could trigger xenophobic violence because the shop owners will not leave. Victor Matutu is the leader of Zim Imbogodo, a non-governmental organization fighting for the rights of women.
If the members of the Operation Tudula are not happy about foreign nationals being given licenses to own small businesses, they must sort it out with the government or with the relevant ministry. They can't go around attacking those foreign nationals because they are not operating illegally.
The government has yet to explain why the group is allowed to do its own inspections. Earlier today, police engaged in heated arguments with Tudula members, telling them to stop. Since September, when four children allegedly died after eating snacks from one tuck shop in Naledi, Soweto, Johannesburg, and another in Bekkestal in West Rand, government teams have started raiding foreign-owned shops searching for expired goods, operating licenses, and undocumented operators. I am Tuso Kumalo for VOA News in Johannesburg.
The International Criminal Court is dropping all war crimes charges against Maxim Mokom, a former militia leader in the Central African Republic, CAR. According to the French news agency AFP, ICC prosecutor Karim Kahan said his office concluded there were no longer any reasonable prospects of conviction at trial, even if the charges were confirmed, because of problems with the availability of witnesses. Mokom had faced charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity over alleged atrocities committed against Muslim civilians in the CAR by what he called his self-defense militias in 2013 and 2014. The country was plunged into bloody sectarian conflict after Seleka rebels, a coalition of armed groups mainly composed of Muslims, ousted President François Bozizé in early 2013. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Shogun Chung, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.